Blog Talk Radio.
This is Justine Rotolo. I'm also known as Miss ADD. I know it's been a while since I've been live on the air. I've missed the program. I'm sure all of you have as well. I'm really excited about today's show because I'm going to have a couple on, and I just want to take a few minutes to tell you a story. This, the woman, Mary, who's the wife in the couple, had called me interested in the adult support group that I run for CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD, in Culver City. And we talked a little bit, and then she, lo and behold, showed up on Thursday night. She was alone. Her husband could not come the first week because he was busy. He's in business and also a pastor of a church. And the reason I'm telling this story is because immediately when I met Mary, I saw that what Mary was trying to do was really totally understand the symptoms of ADHD, understand the lives of people with ADHD, not only for her husband, but also very lovingly for her daughter, who is 14 years old. So the next week, Dave, her husband, showed up. And it's just been incredible having the two of them in group. Just seeing their love between each other is amazing. And just both of them trying to understand and work on their relationship and their life. And so without further ado, I want to bring Mary and Dave onto the program.
Hey, great to be
here.
Hi, how are you, Justine?
Good, how are you?
Oh, great, great.
Good, you guys are having a good day?
We are. And thank you again just for the opportunity to be a part of the show. We're really excited.
Oh, I'm excited to have you on because, as I said in the introduction, I mean, this is a couple, you guys are a couple that are really working on not only your relationship, but really trying to understand, I know you are, Mary, those executive function deficits related to ADHD and how they ultimately affect your relationship, your life, and then also you have a daughter who's 14 who has ADHD.
Right. Yes.
So why
yes,
don't we start off with both of you talking about how you met?
Okay. So, David, you can go, Faith. You go.
Well, we met at the same church, at a church that we have been at for some years. I saw her in service.
Okay.
And we went to a prayer group every morning for about 2 years.
Wow.
Then we went out, and because I had a chance to observe her, she had a chance to observe me in a safe environment. And so I learned a lot about her through her testimonies and saw that she was a very dynamic woman with great potential. And, you know, I fell in love with that.
That's great. And Mary, what did you first fall in love with about Dave?
What I first fell in love with was just his heart for people. He was just a really tenderhearted, kind guy, very charismatic. He could talk to anyone everywhere, wherever we went, you know, he was talking to someone. And I just loved the spontaneity and just how flexible and really free he was. I love that.
Wow. See, that's great, and I hear that from a lot of people because we in this population with ADHD, many of us are very charismatic, we're very engaging,
mm-hmm.
we're very caring, loving people,
mm-hmm.
and we reach out to other people. Unbeknownst to the people that we're with who don't have this gift, like I like to call it because I think it's really a gift, is that there are some executive function deficits like inability to focus or procrastination or difficulty with money or immediate gratification. Sometimes I hear wives or husbands saying, I feel like I have another child that, you know, I don't feel like they're equal and an equal adult to me. And so I was wondering, is how soon after the two of you were together or married, did you begin to see some things about Dave that you kind of were looking sideways?
Well, you know what, I don't know if I look sideways, if you will. And I think what helped us when we did, or when I noticed some things, Dave and I both are certified behavioral analysts. And as a result of that, of course, we have an understanding of different personality types. So for years, we just looked at it as, you know, a difference in personality type. So we learned, and I'll say for me, I learned to appreciate or understand or attempt to understand our personality differences. I am, if we look at it like from a DISC personality profile, I am a DC. You know, I'm focused on plans and processes. I'm very active. And my husband on the other hand, he is an ISC. And so he's focused on, you know, he's people. You know, that's his focus. He wants to get in there. He's very charismatic. And, you know, he'll embellish as it relates to a story sometimes. I mean, he's just Mr. He's that guy. But then sometimes he can get really focused on, like if he's completing a project, you know, then he'll hyper-focus on that. And that's the C part of the DISC personality profile. And so for years, this is how we approached it, you know, just it's about a personality difference. And so it wasn't until many years later, because we just celebrated our 23rd wedding anniversary in May. And it wasn't until
Congratulations.
Maybe about 4 or 5 years. Oh, thank you. Yeah, it wasn't until about 4 or 5 years ago that we even realized there was a diagnosis of ADHD.
So that's very interesting. Well, you know, that's a very positive way for you and Dave to look at just personality differences. It's a very positive way to look at this whole thing, because there's labels that happen with people that can be really destructive. And to look at it as a personality difference is not destructive. It's just different.
Right. Exactly.
Which I think is a very powerful way to look at it. But were there any things, Dave, let me ask you this. Were there any things as you were moving on in your life with Mary, were you seeing things about yourself that you thought, maybe I could do that differently, or was there any of that?
Absolutely. But how I work and I look at life, I believe that we were the opposites of each other. And so where I was strong, she was, and where she was strong, I was, and I'm just a John F. Kennedy kind of thought process. I don't have to know everything about everything, but I want the people around me who do. So when it came to dealing with the executive function deals, I was always able to line the proper people up with the proper tasks. So because of the DISC personality profile, I would have somebody, and I would always want to put a center fielder in center field. I didn't want a center fielder trying to back catch. And so I would put people and work with them in groups and get stuff done, because I was putting the right people in the right places, and then I could oversee it like the blimp and just allow my creativity to work in there. But I did see some things as it relates to just my being able to stay structured when we had plans to save or doing different things. And so I knew it was something there. But, you know, it was the fact that I was looking at her pluses, her minuses, and the same with me. And I just thought that we were directly paired to be with each other. And so, you know, and also I will say that she did cover me in some situations. And so, you know, even now I'm excited about this, because I was talking to her this morning and I was sharing that, you know, there's just some codependent things that I need to work on my end so you can come out of that role. And so, I mean, just this conversation today and just the fact that, you know, about 4 years ago when I found out the diagnosis, I said back then that I would be a spokesperson for ADHD. So I spoke that out of my mouth from a prophetic standpoint, believing that because I never thought it was anything wrong, deadly, you know, fear the dread of the earth, because I've always been able to conquer, to get through college on my own, you know, and to do those different things. Because I just happened to be placed in different environments, or I was able to work the environment, so it kind of had a kinesthetic feel to me. So if I started a job and if it was working behind a desk, I would be able to eventually have that job expand to me going out, traveling, doing different things, so that my need to move would not be hindered and I would not be about to jump out the window.
Wow. That's awesome that you knew that about yourself, that you could see that. So 4 years ago, you were diagnosed, and tell everybody how that happened, because this happens to so many of us.
Well, I was late one night, and I was watching a show, and you know they have the infomercials and commercials, and they have some questions about ADHD. And I had thought about, as it relates to my daughter, and I noticed some things there. And when I first shared it with my wife, she wasn't having it. She wasn't receiving it, but I knew exactly that my daughter had it or was diagnosed with it, and then I knew that I had it. So,
and that's,
you know,
what happens to so many of us.
Right. And so I found out about it, got the phone number, got information, and then we had her speak with someone, and I still knew my daughter was dealing with that, but my wife was a little slow coming around. Because even prior to that, my dad's side of the family are stutterers. So we had a few different things going on, but I'm a public speaker. I was a quarterback when I was little. I mean, so all the various things that people could look at as major limitations or major bad marks, I just received it as something that I would overcome, I would work through it.
Wow. So you were also a stutterer as a child?
Yeah. Yes.
And how were you able to work through that?
Well, I believe sports played a very integral role in that, with me being better than the guys around me, and I excelled and gained confidence and popularity, and, you know, and tie that in with my love for people, you know, everybody gravitated toward me, and it was as if, even if I did stutter or I got stuck on a word, because they loved the person that I was, they would either wait for me to finish or they would help me finish the statement, and we would keep going.
Wow. That's awesome. It's amazing. It really is. So you've overcome a lot of things in your life, and I've heard you talk about this at group, which I think is incredible. So you're coming at ADHD from the same place that I come at it, and that is, it's a gift, because we're very creative people, extremely creative, very bright. But you also do understand that there are some deficits involved that we have to learn how to get better in control of, which we can.
Yes.
And go ahead.
And that's why on this call, I made sure that I didn't get caught up reading the back of a pamphlet and calling the call late. I had the clock in front of me. I called in 20 seconds ahead of time so I could get in, because I wanted my first step to be a good step.
That's great. So let me ask Mary something now. In terms of your daughter, so how do you deal with her, in you, and then I'm going to ask Dave how he deals with her, because I know parents that don't have ADHD can deal very differently. I know you're a very positive person, so I know you come at this from a positive place, although maybe don't understand it as well as somebody who lives it every day. So how do you deal with her?
Well, you know, I want to go back to when David mentioned that initially I wasn't receptive. I was like, oh my gosh, that's not it. You know, I guess I could say in denial, right?
Okay.
I do recall time that she was like 2 or 3 and we would be doing something. And, you know, I always said, Michaela, the word of the day is focus. Come on, let's just focus. Right. And so I just thought it was, you know, like a little game or whatever. Right. Even though it was at times frustrating. I remember I enrolled her in a ballet class and, you know, all of the kids are, you know, you're supposed to be focusing, tapping or doing whatever. And she's looking around and I'm stressed out. It's the parent in the window. Michaela, turn around, focus. Right. And it's like, you know what? I can't even do this. I took her out of the class because it was stressing me out. Right. So. But again, I didn't have any idea, right? And so,
right.
You know, how I deal with her, I mean, it is a learning process. As I stated to you or shared with you earlier, we haven't mastered it, right? And I'm sure I don't
right.
do all things right because I'm sure my husband will attest to this. You know, I'm a high
intensity times 4,000.
Okay, so as he said, I'm in 10 times, what did you say, 4,000?
4,000.
There we go. Okay. So, I think it really, maybe one part of it really helps her focus. It helps her, because she too has experienced a lot, but it's helped her, you know, really just persevere through. I'm not the parent that's going to like, oh my gosh, no, just don't worry about it. You know, I'm just not that one. Yes, you can do it.
Right.
Let's move forward. Regardless of what they said or what they say or how you feel, let's move forward. And so that's it. I mean, I'm a cheerleader, of course, the mom that's going to let you just whine on me and, you know, I'm coddling you all day. I'm not that mom.
But I'll tell you who you are, both of you. I do know this, and this is why she's gonna be so successful in her life, is you give her unconditional love. That's
right.
What children with ADHD need. They need that right. total acceptance for who they are,
mm-hmm.
not what they do, who they are.
Right.
And once they get
exactly.
that, what they do excels everybody else. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I know that that's who the two of you are. Now, let me ask you, Mary, how do you deal, because I watch you in group, and when we go around and we're talking about different things, you so lovingly deal with some of Dave's executive function deficits. I can see that, and I'm wondering, how do you do that? Because there's a lot of people who are going to listen to this show, whether they're listening today or, you know, archived, they're going to want to know, how do you do that?
I'm going to just tell you again, whether it was the executive functioning deficit or whatever, David and I are, of course, you mentioned he's a pastor, but this is not just a title. Our relationship with the Lord is personal. And so prayer
right.
is a major part of our lives. And I believe that is, in addition to the fact that, you know, we're behavioral analysts, we understand personality types, but prayer is really... in our relationship with the Lord is foundational for us. And
wow.
that is what has helped me, I don't want to just say me deal with him, but I'm sure him deal with me, you know? And so we are.
But if I can add something.
Yes.
I'm very clear at this, is that my wife is black and white. I'm great.
Okay.
And so it's easier for me to be with her than it is for her to be with me. And so I believe the regimen core of her and the passion and the fact that she's a General George Patton, stick to it to the very last soldier is down, and the fact that she adheres to the principles that God presents to us about making a covenant with one another. Not a contract. So we have a covenant, and in that covenant, we believe that both of us were fearful and wonderfully made. We have pluses, we have minuses, but we choose to help each other go forward. And so prayer is a central focus, but I believe that we respect each other's core.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that's it, Dave. You said it. I say this to couples that I work with all the time, is at the core, person you're sitting next to is the person you fell in love with, is the person
right.
that you wanted to spend the rest of your life with. At his or her core, this is a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're
right.
talking about the symptoms, and that doesn't
right.
define the person. So thank
exactly.
you for saying that, Dave, because that is the most powerful piece of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And
yeah,
so
wow.
many people miss it. Yeah. And you want to know
right.
something for people listening with children, and I'm sure you guys will agree, it is the same thing with children. At their core, these are really wonderful little adolescents, you know, young adults. These are wonderful people. These are symptoms. And the fear that gets in the way between the parent and the child or the husband and the wife is really the thing that causes all this negative communication to come up.
Right. And I also think with Michaela, because I'm a forerunner with it and haven't accomplished all the things that I wanted to accomplish, but I've been able to navigate and just find assistance along the way and the right door to knock on. And I think my challenge, unlike my wife, is that because I've been down that street before, when I try to help my daughter, sometimes I might go too deep into it because I'm trying to really let her say, hey, honey, if anybody knows how you feel, I do. And so
yeah.
I've had to back up a little bit from trying to have her see it faster than she's able to see it.
Right. And
yeah.
one thing I do have to say, because I was guilty of this as a parent, is when we lecture, even though we're trying to be loving and kind, but we're talking too long, you lose them completely.
Mm-hmm.
And that
mm-hmm.
that definitely happened to me because I talk too long. what I try
yeah,
to
my
tell dad, parents with situations
no,
is to get in and get out fast.
Right. Yeah. My daughter many times has been on the Southwest Air flight, want to fly away on me. So she's been gone. She's been gone. Yeah. So I'm learning that. Soundbite.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. They're gone. You lost them. You can see that glazed look in their eyes that you
oh,
kind of
exactly.
get when you talk. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, looking at
when
you but not really
them.
Looking at you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're just kind of like, you know, giving you what you need.
Right.
So Mary shared about 3 weeks ago an extremely powerful story, and immediately after she told the story, which I'm going to ask her to share, because I also want to tie that in with how David, you know, respected you and heard you and listened to you and helped you through that trauma, but also telling your story, if you could talk about how powerful that was for you just to feel like you were being heard. And out of that story came the book that I'm looking at, which I'm reading, Life Happens, 30 Strategies
mm-hmm.
for Triumphant Living. So
right.
could you tell that? Would you tell that story?
Sure, sure. When I was 17 years old, in fact, I'll start with this part of the story. 2 weeks after I turned 17, my father was out, you know, just watering our lawn, and he had a heart attack and died. And I was preparing to go to work. I worked at Burger King. I was a senior in high school. And, you know, I went down for him to take me to work, and I noticed that something wasn't right. And so I, you know, grabbed my mom, and then we discovered the path. And that was difficult, of course. You know, I was
yes.
really close to my father. We had just moved to Los Angeles from Ohio 3 years prior to that. And so, you know, in retrospect, it looks as if, you know, he brought us here, we were settled, and then, you know, that was it. But so we had a heart attack. That was in the month of November. And really almost 2 months to the day, I was at work again at Burger King. And, you know, that evening, I worked the evening shift like 5 to 1 when I worked on weekends. And it was a Saturday night, and I'd had a disagreement with a friend there at work. And so I decided, you know, I'm going to go get a pack of gum. And it was really interesting because, one, there was a convenience store that was technically a little closer, but the thought that came to mind was that, you know what, it's kind of dangerous over there, so I won't go to that one. And I decided
okay.
to go to one that was on a main street. And so I, you know, I'm left like a block, not even a block away from the store, from that convenience store, and I noticed this guy walking towards me, and he had on a trench coat. And as he approached me, I noticed he was like walking in my direct line, right, in step with me, and so coming toward me. And so I stepped to the left, and so did he. Then I stepped to the right. He did as well. At this time, I noticed a gun. And, you know, I look out in the street, and I'm thinking, and it was a lot of traffic, and it's like, you know, maybe I should run in the street, and then by this, you know, I'll get hit by a car, and then he'll shoot me. And while this is going through my mind, the guy grabs me. And,
wow.
you know, this is like, okay, you know, it's just like, wow, this is unbelievable. And so this guy
yeah.
walked me to a car, and, you know, what I remember thinking while we were walking to the car is that, you know, I was trying to get someone's attention, you know, like
yeah.
a lady or something. Like, doesn't this look This doesn't look right. You know, I have on a Burger King uniform. This guy has on a trench coat. Something should look wrong with this picture. And
but nobody
no one noticed.
No one noticed.
So, you know, we get to the car. And how about there are two other guys in the car, right? And it's like, okay, this is so not good. Cannot believe this. The one thing I think that kind of put me a little at ease, if that is even, you know, realistic, but the two guys in the car, They seem kind of like clean-cut guys. They didn't look like this trench coat guy. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And so
yeah.
they take me off to this remote place, and, you know, I'm raped. And it was interesting because, you know, after the trench coat guy, you know, raped me, it was like he then coerced these other guys. And it was I do recall saying, hey, I thought it was just you, right? Don't ask me where that came from. But
wow.
I did. But it was still, you know, these other two guys. Like I said, it seemed like they did, but they didn't want to be involved, but whatever. And believe it or
Wait,
not,
the whole,
after.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
The whole time mm-hmm. this was happening, were you thinking about the gun at all, that he could use this gun, or
oh,
that had
course.
Didn't even cross?
Of course.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yeah.
That was going through my mind. You know, I just didn't know what was next, what was
right.
going to come after, right? And, again, it's like I just hope I come out of this alive, right? And
wow.
what was interesting is that he dropped me back off. They dropped me back off behind Burger King, like, a you know, just a little bit up and behind Burger King. And when they let me out of the car, he said, don't turn around because we'll kill you. And, you know, my thought was, well, if you were going to kill me, you would have already done that, you know. But I kept walking. And,
wow.
I mean,
wow.
In a daze, you know, that's what happened. Later, of course, you know, went to the hospital, the rape treatment center, and, you know, they did that entire thing at Kaiser. But it was, you know, what was very interesting about this story is that happened on a Saturday night, and that Monday I was right back at school as if nothing
wow.
happened, and I had to go right by where I was abducted every single day, going to school and coming home. From school.
Wow.
And
wow.
a couple of years later, I was led to join the church that I later met David at. It was literally a block away from where this took place. And so, you know, I was in that very same community. And so the way I looked at it was, you know, many times things happen, traumatic things happen in our lives, you know, but oftentimes we get stuck in our story. And when we're stuck,
yeah.
We can't move past it. And, you know, I believe I stated in the book, I don't have the page right now, but it's a very place that we many times experience these traumatic situations or encounters, that is a place where we also can experience our greatest blessing.
Oh,
I know,
absolutely.
For me it was, you know, because it was right at that church.
Let me just ask you something. So do you believe that you suffered PTSD after this happened? I mean, as you look back.
Probably in some way. I'm sure I did initially. I did later go to counseling. I didn't do any support groups then because at that time that is what was recommended. I didn't at that time,
right.
But later I did, see a therapist, and I've had a therapist for a number of years. But I'm sure I did in some way. I'm sure I did.
Okay. And so when did you first get to share this story and feel like you were heard?
You mean just share with anyone or with my
family? Or I think, let's talk about with anyone, then we'll talk about David, because I know you mentioned David was in a group that night. You mentioned how supportive he was. So who was like the first person? Was it a congregation? Was it in church? Was it?
No. I mean, it was a number of years before I shared. I think I may have shared it with a couple of girls who I had a close relationship with at school.
Okay.
But, and a few other friends, but that was it. I mean, honestly, in my home, it was never discussed again.
Wow.
But, when David and I were engaged, I shared it with him. I shared the story with him, and he, again, was very supportive, very encouraging. And it was, years later that I would share maybe in small groups. And I think it was in 2014, I was invited to be a part of a nationwide project, Don't Keep Secrets. And that's when I was challenged to share my story on a broader scale, which then led me to launch a Break the Silence project because April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so for the last 2 years, I've had a Break the Silence event in April so that others, men and women, could come out and break their silence and to realize that, they're not alone. I heard this quote that an untold story never heals. And there's so many people suffering in silence. And this was my charge, if you will, just to share my story, because people will look at us oftentimes and, it's like, you don't understand. You haven't been through anything. And it's like, you don't know my story, And
that's exactly right.
Yeah. So
do you find that many people come out and share when with this program that you're spearheading to get?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. This was the first year where we had men who came out. I had a young man. He, maybe 28 or 30, he was one of the gentlemen who shared. I had three people share their testimony. Who were on our program. And, he shared his story when he was 5 years old. And it was this year that he had an opportunity to confront the person who did it. It was his best friend's brother. And he also shared it with his best friend, 23, 25 years later. But it was very freeing, just people sharing. And people are still contacting me and sharing their story for the very first time, and some of these people are 40, 50, 60 plus years old, and they're sharing it for the first time, and they just thank me for having the courage to speak up, because in some communities, whether it's an African American or maybe church community, there are like some topics that are, maybe not talked about quite as much as others, and this is one of those things, because shame is a big thing. Shame wants to keep you silent.
Yes, and I thank you so much for sharing that, because it touched me that night when you shared it in group. But in addition to that, one of the things that came out of it that you and I have spoken about privately is there's a lot of shame in the ADD population. A lot of that stems from, I think Dave can speak about this, your own childhood and things. I know you were a sports star, but there must have been other things that, maybe the stuttering, whatever, and as you got older, some of the things that maybe you looked around and saw other people moving forward, and maybe you weren't doing things like you thought you needed to do them. There is shame. And so Mary and I talked about the fact that it would be so powerful to talk about this on the show for the reason of having people with ADHD speak up and tell their story, which I think is powerful. Can you speak about that a little bit, Dave?
Yeah, I guess the main thing is that, you know, you when you deal with ADHD, many times you make it to the top of the mountain,
mm-hmm.
but you never fully go over.
Mm-hmm.
And because you always make it to the top of the mountain, people have a potential marker on you. But then when you look around because you haven't completed certain things, or you have kind of sabotaged unknowingly or forgotten about different things and you're not progressing, then it can produce shame as it relates to, you know, where folks are moving. They have a definite focus and you're kind of here and over there, and so it kind
right.
of looks scattered.
Exactly, yeah. And I know
and so,
that you – go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean, it, when you live on Tensho Avenue and you never move to Fulfillment Lane, yeah, it can –
that's great.
It can cause you sometimes to even isolate yourself.
Yes.
Yeah, it can cause
yes,
you to be a loner.
Sure.
So you'll have to deal with the pain of knowing that, you know, if I would apply this differently, you know, if I would have been able to plot the course, stay focused, and not allow something else to grab my attention, then I might be a little further down the road.
Right. And you had mentioned one night in group that coming to group helped you to be able to share this at your church. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, what it did was, now, I'm a transparent guy anyway, so my wife sometimes thinks I share too much stuff. she's aged 007, so her stuff is encrypted.
Oh, that's...
and I'm all out there.
That's not true, man.
And so I had a chance to share with them, because in starting a new church, you know, just like with a rocket, it uses up about 92% of its fuel just going 1 inch off the ground. So when you're trying to develop a group of people, because I knew I couldn't do everything, I was trying to work with individuals in their sweet spot so I could put them in the places that's not my sweet spot. And so in doing that and having assignments or saying I'm going to send something out or we're going to plan this or things sometimes with spontaneity and on the run, when I share with them that this is the diagnosis that I have, but it doesn't have me, and I share some things about it, a few of them said, and they whispered, I have it too. And others said to me that now they have a better understanding of me and a better appreciation for where my gifts are. And so, and going back to my wife, with her doing Break the Silence, I'm a strong believer that the very thing that you think is so hideous is the very thing that will free some people.
Mm-hmm.
And so even as she started Break the Silence for sexual assault, I believe that I'm going to start a Break the Silence for folks who deal with ADHD. To have people come out the closet on that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That would be so incredibly powerful because there's so many people out there, and this is the frightening thing to me. The adults are one thing, but when I have parents come in and they don't want me to mention ADHD to their children because I get the label. I know people don't like labels. I understand. But I think they really need to understand, as I raised my kids, to embrace their ADHD. And by raising them that way, I have taught them how to embrace their depression, their OCD, and they're constantly searching for answers, constantly looking. They're amazing to me. And they will turn around and say to me, because I wasn't the perfect parent, I made a lot of mistakes, but they will say, Mom, because you taught us how to embrace our ADHD, we're not afraid to talk about mental disorders. We're okay with that, that we're depressed, that we have anxiety, that, you know, we have OCD. That's a powerful thing, because if you don't talk about that and you whisper, like Mary and I have talked about, that's a danger zone.
Yeah, and I believe with that, you know, as we look at what's happening, as I look at ADHD, I pull up all the successful folks, Steven Spielberg, and I can go down the list. And so how I present it, I don't present it as a death sentence. I present it as, these are my majorly high strong points, and these are my areas of challenge that I have to work with them so they can coexist together.
Exactly. And when you say challenge, I use that word all the time because I love that word. It's a positive word. It means you're working towards something. Because challenges, we're always able to meet a challenge. But when we start talking about seriousness of certain things, and let's face it, everybody has all different kinds of ADHD. You know, I mean, there's three different kinds, the hyperactive, impulsive, inattentive, and then combined type. That's clinically. But when I talk about everybody has all different types, I mean, some of us procrastinate more than others. Some of us are not emotionally regulated. Some of us have severe anxiety. That's one of the co-occurring disorders. There are others that don't have a lot of those things. They have maybe one or two. And so some of us, life can be a little bit easier. Others are struggling severely with some things that they have to look at and reframe it as a challenge so they can learn how to embrace it and move forward with it.
Exactly.
So let me ask the two of you something, because I think this is important, and I know people who are listening, they love relationship shows that I do. What do you guys, okay, if you have a situation that comes up that might be, Mary, related to, I don't know, David's, one of his challenges, how do you guys work through that? How do you communicate through that? You said you had a very powerful conversation this morning. Can you talk to me a little bit about your communication?
Sure. We do communicate, for sure. That's the number one thing, because I find some couples, you know, they don't.
Right.
We have to identify, we've identified our time. Really, it seems like early morning is kind of best for us. Not every day, but there early mornings kind of work for us. Now, there are some topics at times and some situations where it does take us a little bit longer before we for us to connect, so that we can really kind of get to the bottom line of whatever the issue is, or you know, kind of get to the core of it. But you know, communication is definitely a large part of, you know, it's just a part of our relationship. We make time to communicate with one another and to talk about the difficult things.
Right.
And
how does that go? See, it's interesting because many times what I see is the person with ADHD. I was just Skyping with somebody this morning, and we were talking about this, not being able to take responsibility. And that is related to fear, fear that you're letting somebody down, fear that people are going to look at you in a negative way. How is Dave with, and Dave's on the phone, so I don't want to talk about him in third person. Dave, how are you with taking responsibility for your stuff?
I want to always improve. Player, I was teachable, and I want to learn. I want to go to the next level. I don't want to keep making the same mistakes. And so for me, what to receive from my wife, who throws fastballs, I mean, she's mixing in some off-speed pitches as we've been married, but before she was throwing fastballs. And so we had to deal with when was the appropriate time to deal with something. Because she's so focused and concise, I learned early on in our marriage that when she asked me a question, she was looking for the Magna Carta response and not the rough draft. And so what I had to do many times is if I wasn't ready to answer it right then, I had to learn how to give her a time and we'll come back to it. So I couldn't
that
just say
great.
Not ready to talk about it, because then it would go to her thinking I'm trying to blow it off or procrastinating or not wanting to deal with it. But I needed to gather myself to be prepared. I mean, even now, when she sends me a text and she says, "Hey, babe, can we chat?" There are lower caps. There are no exclamation points. But I'm thinking in my head, oh, shoot, what, you know, what major Mount Everest situation am I going to have to come up with to deal with her giving me, you know, the stare through, you know, the squint eye, you know, really analyzing me with the laser, you know what I mean? So I need for her to tell me what she wants to talk about so I can be ready for her. And so we've learned each other's pace.
You're so funny,
yeah.
Dave. You're the best. So creative. Mary, let me ask you something. Will you break it down for him? Like if you say to him, "Babe, can we talk?" Mm-hmm. If he comes back to you and says, "Okay, what is this about?" Will you kind of break it down? Like before
oh, sure.
you sit
Definitely.
Down?
Definitely.
Okay.
I'll give him an overview. Because, again, as you stated, if I send him a text, "Hey, babe, can we chat about this?" And then he'll send it back. I know now he'll be, "Okay, what is it you want to talk about?" Like, I really do have to brace myself or get prepared for this, right? And so I will give him a high-level overview, "Babe, this is it," like almost in bullets. Boom, boom, boom. That's it. That's what I like to talk about.
That's great. That's great. I love the I love the Magna Carta. That's the best. That was hysterical.
Oh yeah.
And
oh,
you see,
yeah.
I watch the two of you in group, and you laugh a lot. And I'm a big humor person. I love to laugh, and laughter
mm-hmm.
is the best medicine for everything. I mean, when I see parents getting very uptight about their children, I just want to say, can you just laugh? Like, I would laugh. My boys and I would laugh all the time because here we were, three ADD people in a house, you know, with an ADD dog who was on an antidepressant. How funny was that? It should have been a sitcom.
Oh, my God.
Well, hey, if they ever stuck a camera into our Thursday night, that is hilarious. I mean, that time in there is so edifying, man.
It's refreshing.
Hey, I am excited when I leave out of there. I'm like, really? This is funny.
We have some great people in there. We have some.
Oh yeah.
So, you know what I love about that? It's diversified. There's different kinds of people in there, and there's people that are in a lot of pain. You can see that. But again, there's so many of them that are using humor to help them over the hump. And what I love about both the groups that I run is that everybody's willing to chip in and to help that one person that night that may be really hurting. They're willing to come up with these incredible creative ideas like Dave talking about, you know, before the Magna Carta, which I have to tell you is the funniest thing I've ever heard. Talking that way and figuring out how to help these people, that's what it's all about. That's what we excel at, is our creative side comes out when we get moving and we're going to help other people.
Right.
It's just a powerful thing. It really is.
Yeah.
So let me just go back to your daughter for a minute. How has your daughter accepted the fact that she has ADHD?
Honestly, she hasn't accepted it too well. Because, again, as David stated, I think we discovered, or she started stuttering a bit before we discovered or she was diagnosed with ADHD. So, of course, she hated that. you know, and so
and they're lactose intolerant.
When we discovered she was lactose intolerant. So it just seemed like when she was 9 months old, it seemed like she, you know, in her mind, it's like, oh my gosh, all this stuff is wrong with me, right?
Oh.
And then we discovered that, you know, she was diagnosed with ADHD, and so it's one more thing, right?
Right.
And
right.
So she's you know, we're just working through her with it, again, helping her see the positive, see her strength, and not just focus on this diagnosis or all of the things that she feels that are, you know, that she feels are negative. And so,
yeah.
But she isn't really like, hey, you know, she doesn't want to be the team spokesperson right now. that is not just where she is. You know what I mean? So that's why she is not on the call. How about that? No.
That's so funny. It's so funny because, you know, I have to tell you, if and I'm willing to help in any way I can, we can help her embrace this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be so much better for her. And it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. But just really being able to communicate with other people that have just really accepted this diagnosis as, you know, I say, and Dave says, it's not a death sentence. It's,
exactly.
You know, it's a challenge. I mean, that's just the way I look at it. And the other thing is grades, I just have to put this out there because I've always told my boys when they would leave in the morning, guys, school is what you do. It is not who you are. Now, they're now 29 and 25, so they're grown.
Oh, wow.
But
mm-hmm.
My older son said he wrote his essay to colleges and used that about what I would say to them every morning because I didn't want them defining themselves by their grades. What I would look for was effort. And if effort was there and if their homework was turned in and they were doing the things they needed to do and they got a C, okay, all right, that's okay. This pressure for straight A's,
right.
I mean, it has them defining themselves. And the both of you know this because I know you do. How many people have you seen in your life who define themselves by their big house and their expensive cars, not what's inside?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's where I'm going.
And that's what we share with her. As you said, it's who you are. It's really about character. And that's what we are really stressing as it relates to Michaela and really developing character. And, you know, it is interesting, even at school, I want to go back to this, how, you know, last year was her first year in high school. And she's at an all-girls high school. And
at a very competitive.
Very competitive all-girls high school.
Okay.
And, you know, I spoke with her counselor. It was probably the second semester and, you know, mentioned this. And the lady was sharing with me all of these like, wonderful, we'll say, benefits, like, you know, she can get extra time on a test, et cetera, et cetera. And so I shared it with Michaela. Michaela was like, Mommy, why did you share it with her? I can't believe that. I don't want to take the extra time. Other people will know something's wrong. And it's like, whoa. You know, and so
I know.
We really had to, like, frame the picture, okay?
Yeah.
And help her to really see the benefit of it. And so, you know, she's coming around slowly but surely. But, you know, with anyone, with most people, you know, no one wants to be different. No one wants to be looked at as like, oh, my gosh, you know, why am I getting extra time? And so, you know, we're just on this journey of being delivered from people, if you will, and really helping her. Because many times we don't do things or we're motivated to act a certain way because we're so focused on these people and what they're going to think or what they're going to say. And, you know, I always say to her, Michaela, who are these people at the end of the day that we're allowing to almost, it's like they have a remote control and they're dictating, you know, how we're going to respond, right? It's like, who are these people?
Right.
And we have to be settled at the core of who we are and that we are, you know, fearfully and wonderfully made by God. We're made in His image. So we can't allow other people to dictate, you know, what we do or how we respond.
No. But, you know, it is true. They, especially teenagers, have a very difficult time with that feeling different thing. You know, I have accommodations, you know, I get extra time for tests, or I get to, you know, sit in preferential seating. You know, it's interesting because my oldest son came up with something that I thought was kind of brilliant. He would tell his friends when he'd go off to take a test in the room with the special ed teachers, he'd say, you know, I'm special. And it was very funny because his friends wanted to be special too. They were like, because he said, I have people reading the directions to me in case, you know, I don't understand that. To me, that's being special. So it was very interesting how he switched that up. My younger son did the same thing, followed suit, and then they were very happy to go up to their teachers and remind them, you know, I get extra time for this test, when they, you know, wouldn't send them off to another room to take the test. You know, the other thing is that a lot of us, myself, I'm one of these people, it was very hard for me in graduate school. I used to have to go to another room to take an exam when people were clicking their pens or chewing gum. I couldn't do it. I couldn't concentrate. So, see, that's the other thing. When she gets to really understand herself more and what her needs are, it's going to be easier for her to accept the help.
Right. That's
she's
good.
Not there yet, but she's young, you know?
Right.
So you have to just keep being very positive with her about accommodations are, you know, things that everybody needs. It's not only people with ADHD. Other people need accommodations as well. So, I mean, I think in time it'll get better for her. And so let me ask you this. How has her ADHD affected your lives as a family, as a couple?
I think what has happened is through some things with lack of impulse control, I do some things with immaturity, we've had to switch real and kind of plan some things out, stay on top of some things with her, which she does not like. But we've been clear with her that instead of you wait to the last minute, and we have stuff to do, we have very busy lives, and you are the center of that, you need to allow us to dip into what you're doing just to make sure that you're completing what you say you are and that we're not out with you until 5 o'clock in the morning and we're trying to help you finish stuff, because that puts more pressure on you. And as you know, sometimes when folks deal with ADHD, their ability to respond to pressurized situations kind of immobilizes them.
Yes.
And so we try to put her in a situation now to where we are monitoring her and we're having her check in with us. And we're having
her,
you know, study for 30 minutes, take a break for 10 minutes. So use a timer. Text it as you're going through. And so we're trying to help her build a regimen. Yeah, so that'll help her
idea.
Be able. Yeah.
That's a great idea. So have you guys always been together when it comes to situations that come up where there might have to be discipline, which, by the way, in the Greek language, discipline means to teach. It doesn't mean to yell or scream or, you know, that's not the kind of discipline I'm talking about. But are you guys, does she know that you guys are together? Because that's so powerful when parents are together.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, she definitely knows that we are on one accord. And she also knows that you can't come to mommy and, you know, think I'm, you know, even though dad has said something or vice versa. We will say, hey, did dad say something different? And then, of course, you're like, oh, why did you say something? But, you know, she learned that early on. We've been clear about that we are on the same page.
That's great. That's really important. Do you notice that she reacts, she feels like possibly you get her easier than mom does, or is that not the way it works?
For some things, I mean, she plays it both.
Okay.
And so some things she'll gravitate toward mom on and share different things. Sometimes she'll gravitate toward me. But I think she does have different conversations with both of us. And and the other day, it was, you know, it was a blessing to me because she was sharing a situation with me as she's trying to develop friendships. She has a very short leash with folks. And so she quickly grows tired of people. And so she shared a situation about a young lady who was very pressing her as it related to her getting together with them. But when she backed out of something, she wasn't pressuring. So she was like, "Dad, was she just being hard?" And so she was talking to me about it, and I helped her look at it from a different standpoint. So
wow.
I said, "Michaela, before you cut her off, find out if she just comes from a family that they're very inquisitive, or
wow.
find out over time if she a pushy person, or find out through interaction with her if she a person who is all about her." So you can't find that out in one or two sittings. But you also have to realize that you want people to give you the same leverage too. So you can't be quick to the gun on folks when some things have to still develop.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great advice. That's really great. You know what you did for her, Dave? You helped her sequence, because that is definitely one of the challenges that we have, those executive function deficits, is sequencing. And you helped her sequence that whole situation, which is so awesome. It's great.
Thank you.
You're a good dad. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
So when,
really,
when she wants to go out with friends, I mean, if she, because, you know, this is a difficult world. We all know that, right?
Yes.
And 14 is a difficult age at times. I mean, you know, those hormones are kicking in, and it can be hard for kids at that age. They're just starting the teenage years, although the new adolescence is now 11 to 25. But what do you do if she wants to go out with friends? Do you have to know where she's going, who house she's – I'm sure you're going to say yes. House she's
most
at.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so, but
and usually she meets friends out, like maybe at Dave and Buster's or, you know, at the mall or something like that. She doesn't do a lot of, like, hanging out at people's homes. So at this point, that's kind of how we do it. When she has we used to call it, of course, play date. But now she's a teen, you know, when she hangs out with her friends, it's usually like that. And I don't want to say totally monitor, but, you know, we'll give her a couple of hours. You guys hang out, and then either I am picking her up or her dad is picking her up. So.
Okay, which is great, because you're allowing her to have that interaction with her friends, but in a controlled environment.
Exactly.
Especially with ADHD at the teenage years, can get a little crazy. I know I was one of them. And it's just that whole regulation, emotional regulation thing that happens naturally for teenagers anyway, can be heightened sometimes with the ADHD.
Right.
It's just something to keep in mind.
And we live in a different world now. I mean, your kids just can't go play with folks that you don't know. And we are protective of her, because her ability to function sometimes, remember streets or pay attention as she's crossing the street, we're trying to help her with that kind of awareness. You got to look where you're going. You got to keep your head. You got to look so that somebody thinks that you're not easy picking. We're trying to teach her those things, so that we can trust her to go things that have less parental support in and things of that, so we can make sure that we don't put her into a situation that she's not prepared for.
Right. Yes.
So
you
we're
know,
trying to
I
keep
once
her
had a
herself.
I once had a therapist years ago when I was in my 30s and I had my kids. he made a really good analogy that I share with other people. You know, if we were a big oak tree and we had a fence around the bottom, as our children get older, we allow that fence to move out a little bit. There's still the fence, but it's moving out. And then when they become teenagers, the fence goes a little farther. Eventually, when they're adults, there is no more fence. But there's always that protection. And the protection is helping them understand how to navigate the world in a very positive way. And Dave, with you having ADHD, you can help her navigate her world from that perspective with those challenges. And then she has a mom who doesn't have ADHD who can come in and give her another perspective on things. So it's really great for her that she has the both of you.
Right. We think so.
Yeah. I think you do a great job. Hey, listen, I wanted to ask both of you, and Dave, if you could answer first, how has the group helped you? You haven't been there for a long time, but I'm wondering how it's helped you with your ADHD.
Well, it's helped me better focus on this, and because now I have something tangible. I mean, you are an absolutely magnificent facilitator of communication. And you work within us, and you shut us down in a way that we don't feel shut down. I mean, it's amazing the way you do that. But what it's done
for me is it's helped me
put you to the forefront and not just talk about it. I'm an ancillary guy. I'm a quick guy. And what it's done for me is even now I was downloading some of those task lists from the sheet I gave you, the apps for productive habits. And so without this time coming together, I wouldn't have really went and finished the task. So now I'm more focused on it so that I can start building up positive habits so that I can help my wife undo some codependent habits of saying, hey, babe, it's 7:25, we're 10 minutes to be at work. That's too much stuff for her to do.
Exactly.
And then also, she can now not digress to being late or just making it there when she's an early person because she's compensating for us. So,
right.
I mean, it's given me an understanding of just the effects of what my ADHD has had on her, even though I'm fully supportive of her and what her different issues might be.
Wow. That's very powerful. So you had a discussion this morning about codependent interactions with each other?
Yeah, what I was sharing with her is that, I mean, to give you a perfect example, we have an 8 o'clock service, and we're going to a place that's not ours. And so we have to go in and set up what we're setting up, and we need to get there by 7 o'clock.
Okay.
We don't live but about 10 minutes away, but I need to be there on time because I'm the pastor.
Right.
But so many times, my wife, I mean, she gets up early every morning. I mean, I think she taps the rooster on top of his head so he can go in and make some noise. But as it is, though, she ends up still putting her makeup on at 6:50.
No, babe, not 6:50. No.
All right, 6:47. 6:47 is. And my point was this with her. I said, I don't want you to have to digress to me. I want to be able to plan if I take my shower the night before, if Michaela takes a shower the night before, if we have to get up 15 minutes earlier because we sit in the bathroom for 15 minutes, we want to make those adjustments so that you can stay true to your timeliness. Because it must be frustrating for you to have fallen in to my game. So I want to flip the script.
I am very impressed. That is really awesome, Dave. I mean, Mary, you must have felt really positive about that conversation.
I did. It came out of nowhere. You know, we woke up this morning. I mean, it was before 5 o'clock. We were having this discussion, and so it was refreshing. It was.
Wow.
Very refreshing.
I love it. Dave, I think it's awesome because I want to tell you, I wrote an article once, which I might bring to group, and it was called that codependent behavior. Wait, let me just think for a minute. ADHD is an incubator for codependent behavior.
Mm.
And I'll bring it. I'll make a copy of it and bring it because it's very interesting.
Please.
How
yeah.
We can become very codependent with other people because, you know, hey, you know, if you're going to do everything for us, oh, okay. You know, we're gonna take it. But Dave's right, because what happens is the other person then ends up maybe putting their makeup on at 5 to 7 when they have to be out the door at 7 because they've helped the other two people get ready to go. That you figured that out, Dave, is incredible. I would like you to share that on Thursday night because I think it's
okay.
Incredibly powerful. I would really appreciate it. Mary, how has the group helped you?
Oh, wow. You know, the group has helped me tremendously just to be able to be in an environment and to see that there are other people who are doing similar things to my husband. Because, again, with me just coming from a world where, I just really didn't know anything about ADHD. I did not, right? You know,
right.
Maybe what you hear, but it's like, oh, okay, you know, I'm sure there are some people someplace, you know, who were dealing with that or whatever. And so I just never really looked at it personally. And so I then thought that some of the things that I was dealing with here, you know, just with David and myself, I just thought it was just, like I said, just a personality thing for him. But, you
mm-hmm.
know, being in group, it's really helped me realize that, no, my goodness, there are other people, that this really is something, you know, that's specific maybe to ADHD. And it's really given me a heightened level of compassion and sensitivity. Yeah, it really
great.
Has. You know, because I am, I think, when I look back at, you know, what happened, you know, when I was 17, and the fact
yeah.
that I was just forced to go back into life, you know, I'm just that survivor kind of girl. I'm that girl that just
right.
shifts into survival mode. And sometimes that's how I, you know, I think everyone, okay, hey, let's just move forward, right? You know, just come on,
right.
get up. And,
right.
You know, but being in group and hearing everyone and just, also, just looking at the schemas, oh, my gosh, this has just opened up my understanding to so many things. It's broadened my understanding, and as I stated, it's really heightened my compassion.
And so
can
so
I add
great,
something else
because,
to that?
Absolutely.
And also what this time has done is I moved from just saying that I was going to be a spokesman for ADHD because
right.
I see how in the school system, if you have great sums of money, you can send your kid to a school who has ADHD and they have curriculum
mm-hmm.
and programs set up that's more kinesthetic, different
mm-hmm.
stations, different
right.
movement. But you go to
right.
other schools, one teacher, 45 kids, and if my perpetual movement is core to me, then I'm out of my seat. Now I'm a bad kid. If I
right.
jump in and answer a question too soon, then now I'm sitting in the principal's office. And so
right.
I see it helping me from that standpoint, going back and just help people embrace the knowledge about their child so they can put them in places to win. But also,
right.
through me coming, you know, there's a book that's been dropped in my spirit, and I've had a couple of names for it, and I'll share it with you on air. It's
okay.
Transcending ADHD with the Grace of God.
Oh,
so being
wow.
able to talk about that and transcending it. I may
That's
be
awesome.
Diagnosed with it, but it doesn't have me. And so being
That's
able
odd.
To
awesome.
Give, and I would like for you to be a part of that and kind of share it in conjunction with the whole Break the Silence. Go on Facebook.
Oh,
share with folks what I'm doing. And be able to have
love
folks
to.
Come to a forum, whether it's a place we meet whether it's a conference call, whether it's a web conference, so we can get folks talking about it, dialoguing about it, so we can change the interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I love it. And I want to tell you something. There are hundreds and hundreds of groups on Facebook that I belong to. Some of them I don't because I haven't even counted them yet, where I post my shows, and people will always just give me like a thank you. And even your show got, this show that we're doing got so much reaction. I mean, it was incredible. And it, so it tells
wow.
you that the whole couple thing, the way relationships get destroyed, that people are struggling. And what I see is I have a lot of people who will write to me personally, or I'll read posts and they're really sad because they're not in a good relationship or they're struggling with their children. What you're thinking about doing, the book you're going to write, just going to be very powerful. And yes, I would love to join forces with both of you to help get this word out there. Mary and I talked about the whole mental health issue, you know, that people talk about, you know, ban the guns, you know. Wait a second. These people that are shooting people have mental disorders. And there's so much fear about talking about mental disorders. People whisper about it. That's what we laughed when Mary and I, because when you talked about your parishioners or the people on your staff, they're at church whispering about it. We need to be yelling it, you know. That's what we need to do. We need to get to Washington, D.C. We need to go there and talk to Congress about, there has to be, insurance companies have to cover mental health the same way they cover us to get an EKG or a mammogram. Happening. It's still in the shadows. This is where anybody that wants to jump on the bandwagon with Mary and I, because I know you're in this with me, Mary, we need to really get this out. And Dave as well. We need to get it out there. And you have a venue, being the pastor of a church, is a powerful venue for you to really start this whole conversation. Because it's not only ADHD. Remember, there's co-occurring disorders. There's depression. There's anxiety. There's bipolar. There's personality disorders. There's tics. There's Tourette's. There's all these different things. There's somebody who's schizophrenic. We saw that gentleman at the show tonight that we were all there. Very sad. Very sad. There needs to be help for these situations, for people. You know, I have a gentleman who's coming to see me who, you know, he working on a sliding scale with him. I'm happy to. He cannot get an appointment for a psychiatrist for meds, and he needs them because he's got Medi-Cal for 3 months. Come on.
Wow.
He's depressed.
And what's powerful about this is my background is psychiatric health. I used to run mental board and care facilities.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So
you understand. You get this. You understand that.
I get it also from the standpoint of being raised in the inner city. And many folks who darken our jail cells weren't really bad people.
No.
They just had bad impulse control issues.
Yes.
So something happened. They didn't respond correctly. They reacted. Now they have 5 to 10 years.
Right.
And so being
and
able
look,
to...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
And so being able to speak to that, coming out of a major metropolitan city, being able to articulate it in a way that it doesn't sound like a death sentence, and that we can work to help balance it, that's what I believe I'm called to do right now.
Yes. And look, let me share this with you too. I've shared this many times on my shows. My oldest son, and I think I've shared this in group, is 2 years sober. And the first year, his first year birthday, I went up and was so proud of him and so excited, and I threw a party at his house for 25 of his sober friends. Every one of those kids or young adults that showed up had ADHD. Every one. So I do podcasts all the time about addiction begins with ADD. Our dopamine levels are lower than your normal person walking around. Our happy is harder to get to. So that doesn't only mean alcohol and drugs. It means exercise. Some of us get into this thing where we have to exercise 7 days a week. Well, you know, you could say, well, that's a better addiction, of course, but when it's extreme, that's a problem too. Food. I was 300 pounds. Sugar was my thing. So that's something else. You know, you have addiction that is another co-occurring disorder. And then you have these poor people. I used to work with heroin and opiate addicts at a methadone clinic, and these people are being thrown in jail. And guess what? They need a rehab. They need a place to recover. They don't need jail. That isn't going to help them.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, and you've got to have a mental disorder if you're sticking a needle in your arm.
That's right.
So, I mean, there's just so much work to be done. I know I sound like I'm on a soapbox because I am right now.
No,
it's
you're
a passion
right.
for me. It's such a passion, and I can hear it in both of you as well, that you want to get out there and do this work as well. And that's, I'd love the three of us to join forces and grab as many people as we can to help us get that word out.
Oh, yes. I'm excited.
We would love that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I am too. I am too. How soon before your book will be done?
Well, just in the planning stages now, so I'm just
okay.
recording different titles for different chapters.
Okay.
I want to have a chapter in there for breaking the curse of codependency.
Yes.
And
yeah.
and my wife will be on that one. I have somebody who I want to talk with and kind of do an interview with that talks about how the food we eat and the sugar
yep.
that we do activate
yep.
certain things. So
yes, it does.
I mean, yeah, and so I can talk to you more offline about just my thought, but I think the biggest thing to get the awareness out will be doing a Break the Silence event. Probably
yeah.
posting that that ADHD checklist thing I showed you.
Yes.
And just having people just casually fill it out on their own time and then
yep.
inbox me if they're interested. And I would do some YouTube posts and put them on Facebook, kind of talking about it, set a date, and see what's going to come out.
Yeah, it's great. It's awesome. It really
yeah.
is. That checklist that you have is kind of like the Connors rating scale that we use as therapists or in a doctor's office, where they'll give you like three copies and they'll expect the parents and the teachers and even the adolescent or child to fill it out, like self-reporting.
Right.
And it's a powerful checklist. Yeah, it's really powerful. So the message you're getting out there through everything you're doing is just going to be amazing. It's going to be incredible because we have to bring more light to this, to the whole mental health issue. But ADHD, of course, is my passion, and it's incredible to allow people to talk about their own journey and, you know, even if they're stuck, to help them get unstuck is amazing.
Right. Yeah.
So, Mary, you're
well,
definitely going to be involved in this. I know that.
Oh, definitely. I am. I'm looking forward
yeah.
to it.
Yeah. So let me ask you something. I have a question that somebody posted on my website for both of you. Sometimes people don't call in. But quickly, because we've got about, I can't believe, see, I told you how fast this goes. We've got 5 minutes. How do you both handle a disagreement? So when one of you wants one thing and somebody and the other one wants another thing, how do you resolve the disagreement? How do you compromise? It's a good question.
Well, I mean, we believe that just because I'm a male and my wife is female, that there's certain paths or certain things that are in stone. My wife is better with handling money when we have money.
Okay. Okay.
I do better when we're robbing Peter to pay Paul. And so able
okay.
to do the communication and those. And so we just utilize each other's best skills. Now, if something needs to be handled immediately, then my wife is a person of few words and intensity. She can get it done. If something needs to be massaged, then I'm the great massager. I can deal with it, but in our disagreement, we first go into it that we're on the same team.
Okay.
We believe that, and I had to learn it later in my life, because in my family, if I was talking like this, God bless my mom, but she would say, "Don't you raise your voice to me, boy." And I would say, "Mom, if I spoke any lower, you need a bionic ear to hear what I was saying." And so in my family, when we were seeking to get clarity, we saw it as conflict. In my wife's
wow.
family, they could raise their voices, go straight at it, throw fastballs, but that was just the tone for their family. They were a loving family. And so
wow.
what my wife had to understand was, because we were so suppressed, that when I did raise my voice, I had already been mad for 45 minutes. And so we had to understand each other's temperature,
mm-hmm.
and also had to know when we were trying to come to an answer, that we would weigh each issue, because we believed that both of us were gifted to answer the question.
Hmm. Do you agree with that, Mary? Is that how you see it also?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
Okay.
I agree. Yeah.
And so you guys, go ahead.
No. As my husband stated, you know, we did come from different perspectives, and I don't see conflict as something that's negative. You know, I see it as something
right.
where we are getting clarity, and, you know, of course, it's how you approach it. But, you know,
right.
if you approach it in a mature way, that is, so over the years, we, you know, through trial and error, we have and are learning one another, you know, learning, you know, when it's the best time to say something, and tone and text. And, you know, you have to, you know, factor in the three or four T's to communication. And so, you know, it's not just something that we hear about or something that we've read. We really are intentional about applying these things that we read about and these things that we even teach
wow.
about. We're intentional about applying it to our lives.
It's so great. I can't tell you how happy I was to have you both on the show. I definitely want to have you back, and especially when Dave finishes that book. That's going to be so exciting.
Oh, yeah.
I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to seeing you. I don't know if you're there Thursday night, but because I know you're going away. But I'm looking forward to spending more Thursday nights together. And thank you so much for this time. It really meant a lot to have you on.
No, thank you for the opportunity, really. It's just, I mean, it's great. I just thought it was like, just meeting you was like a godsend, really.
Oh,
so,
thank you. I feel the same way.
I look forward to getting to know you. Yeah, so we're excited for the opportunity.
Thank
yeah,
you.
And
Dave,
and
you have a great day, too.
All right, and
yes.
I endorse that message.
Thank you, Dave. You should do some
right.
stand-up. You're very funny. You guys have a great Sunday, and we'll talk soon.
All right, you too.
All right, thank you very much. Bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everyone, we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. And remember, everyone, please, to stay in the moment. Have a great Sunday.